Right, Queens, I have with me a special guest. I have Elizabeth Hall with me today, and I'll read Elizabeth's bio to you and then, of course, introduce her to the show. So Elizabeth Hall is an ICF certified mind, body, eating and intuitive wellness coach. She helps women recover from years of chronic dieting and emotional eating by understanding what drives their behaviors and helps them to reconnect their inner wisdom. Her work allows people to explore and redefine health and well-being from a place of compassion and non-judgment, so they can learn to trust their bodies and create a life that they love. Elizabeth, welcome to the Body Love Binge.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on the show. It's great to be here.
I'm excited for this. I'm going to dive in with 10 quick fire questions to have a bit of fun before we get into the juice. So are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
Okay, number one, if you could have dinner with any three people, dead or alive, who would they be?
Wow. Okay. Dinner with three people, dead or alive. Okay. So we'll throw Oprah Winfrey in there because I think everybody throws Oprah in there. I would love to have dinner with Jimi Hendrix. That would be pretty awesome. And dead or alive. Who else? Maybe, let's see. Oh, maybe I'm drawing a blank. I will say
your future self.
We'll go with that. We'll go with that. My future self. Yes.
That just came
completely
randomly.
Drawing a blank. Yeah. That's good.
Okay. Number two, if you could possess a superpower for a day, what would it be and how would you use it?
Flying, so that I could go far and wide and see the scenery below and fly over rivers and mountains and trees and just take in all the beauty that there is.
I think I would agree with you on that one. Number three, what's the most unusual or interesting talent you have, if you do have one, that most people might not know about?
I can touch my nose with my tongue.
You know I'm going to ask you to do that right now, don't you? Are you
I guess so. That's the first thing that popped into my head, because for some reason, people always seem to think that's pretty cool.
I can't look. Oh, yeah. I'm way far off. That's not working for me. That's YouTube listeners. Well, also,
there you
can try on the podcast too. I invite you to try and let us know who you can. Okay, next question. Here we go. If your life was a movie, what would the title be and who would you play in the lead role?
Wow, these are big questions.
Yeah, they're not quick questions, are they? I don't know why I say that.
The first title that popped in my head, can I swear?
Oh, of course.
Okay. Is I Fucked It Up, But I'm Okay.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
And I would have some hot mess as the lead role, like Courtney Love or something.
Yeah. I'm down with that. Elizabeth. Okay. This is a quick question. Beach holiday or mountain retreat?
Oh, geez. Both, but I would go with beach first.
Okay. Yeah. If you had a time machine that you could visit any historical event, what would it be and what would you do there?
Ooh, wow. These are so
I'm not going to lie. ChatGPT gave me these and they're pretty awesome.
They are pretty awesome. That's huge. Yeah. I would like to reflect on that one for a while. But if I could go back to any historical event. Oh, my gosh. There are so many that would be interesting. Signing the Declaration of Independence. I don't know why that just popped into my head. Yeah. And what was the rest of that question?
What would you do if you went back?
For me, it would be just understanding what got us where we are now. What was the thinking of the time that got us to where we are now? And sort of what was that energy like?
Yeah. Oh, my God. The energy would be insane.
Yeah. I would like to experience that.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay, if you feel like sharing, what's the weirdest or most memorable dream you've ever had?
Oh my gosh. The weirdest or most memorable dream. I do have a recurring dream that I've had since college, which is that I forgot to pack up my apartment after college. And somehow I'm late, I'm behind, the truck isn't coming. I need to get all the stuff out of there. I'm still paying rent on it. Like all these problems because I never cleaned up the apartment and got out of there properly. Which I don't know what that means, but I have that every couple months or years. I'll have another, I'm moving and I forgot to pack.
That's so interesting. I mean, I'm not allowing myself to go there because as a coach, I'm like, oh, what question can I ask to like bring this to the light? But we're not here to do that. So thank you for sharing that. That's really interesting. Okay. Desert standard desert island question. Three things you can take, what you're going to take with you.
On a desert island, can I bring a person? Okay, so I bring my husband, and I would bring food, like a big suitcase of food,
Smart.
and I would bring books, lots of books.
Yes, I agree with those. Okay, two left. What's the most embarrassing or awkward moment you've experienced, if you don't mind sharing?
Most embarrassing. Okay, so this is a funny one that my sisters love, is I was in a store and I wanted to try out a chair. So I went to sit on the chair, but the chair was sitting on a rolling platform and the chair fell off the rolling platform as the rolling platform rolled. So I'm on the ground with the chair. The rolling platform has rolled into another platform and knocked all the things off of that platform. And I'm in the middle of a department store on the ground in a skirt, nonetheless. Wonder, and this is as a grown adult, this was probably 10 years ago.
Wow.
Wondering if anybody saw me and looking up and seeing other people just look away. Just they're like, oh my God, what just happened? And I was laughing so hard I couldn't even get up. So it was embarrassing and hilarious all at the same time. And the other day I went in a store and they had a little warning on their chair. It said, do not sit on chairs on platforms. And I was like, I must be on a viral video somewhere where people are like, don't do this if you're setting up your display in a store.
Oh my
So
God, that is epic.
it was
That's
good. It was
hilarious.
good. Yeah,
Thank
it
you for
was
that
very
laugh.
good.
That's so funny.
Yeah. That
Oh, okay.
was good.
Ground back down. What do
Yeah.
you want people to take away from this podcast? That's the last question of the quick fire ones.
Yeah, so the topic that we're going to be talking about, plus I'm promoting a summit. It's a free summit, and I know we're going to maybe talk about that a little bit at the end, but called the Body Confident Woman, that people can sign up for free, which has 2 weeks of food freedom and body peace experts talking about all the different ways that we can be kinder to our bodies and how to feel better in our bodies just sort of on a daily basis. So I would love to share that that's available for people to experience.
Yes, and I'm one of the speakers.
Yes,
So,
exactly.
yeah,
Perfect.
there's some great speakers there. I'm excited to watch it and listen myself. So, okay.
Thank you.
Well, let's dive into the juice of the episode then, Elizabeth. So, I would like to ask you, and I do have notes here, but it's always going to lead to an intuitive conversation. Let's dive straight in with how did intuitive eating not work for you? Because I think what you might share, people will resonate a lot with.
Yes. So when I first came across intuitive eating, I had been trying to diet or dieting for 30 years. So I'd gone on my first diet at 12, and then that mentality was just what I thought was normal. So just to deal with my daily life, I would always, try to set up some kind of eating plan, maybe number of calories. I would always do, I had some kind of marker that I was always judging myself by. And when I came to intuitive eating, I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Like freedom. This has got to be, I didn't quite trust it because I thought this is too good to be true. How can I let go of all the rules and still feel okay in my body and still feel connected to my body and whatnot. And so I dove in, but what I didn't realize was all the underlying reasons why I dieted or why I used food in the first place. So I
Mm.
just had no awareness. I came in with no awareness, which feels pretty common to me because, you know, if you've been dieting forever, intuitive eating does look really appealing.
Yeah.
And it's just so different. You're like, oh, let me try this. Like I've been doing the same thing forever. Let me try something new. But yeah, just lack of awareness meant I didn't know my own self. I didn't know my emotions. I didn't know what how important food was to me in my programming and in my pathway. Because I kept looking at the dieting as the problem. But the reason I even went on the diet was because for years and years as a kid, I used food to soothe and comfort. And so I didn't have a great relationship with food, even. Well, and I say it wasn't a great relationship, but what it was survival. That was my comfort. That was my connection. So I had done that from a very young age, but I kind of forgot about that when I jumped into intuitive eating and went straight to sort of, it was still an important piece. I had to let go of diet culture. I had to understand how diet culture had impacted me, but it made me like it didn't focus me on, well, why did diet culture impact me so much in the first place? Because I kind of feel like it's a key in a lock sometimes. Like sometimes it's just the thing that fits where you already are, as opposed to just, and for some people, I think it also comes out of nowhere and just impacts us, because we're very vulnerable and susceptible at that age, you know, going through puberty, so many changes, things are so awkward and uncomfortable. But yeah, so intuitive eating didn't work for me because I didn't know myself when I tried to do it.
That's so interesting. And I want to, I've got a few questions to ask around a bit the story you've shared. When you were a child and you used food to cope, so it was a savior in a way, did you then start dieting after that? Or like what
Yes.
came first? So the dieting came second.
Yes. The dieting came second because as a child using food to cope, I was a bigger kid. And I think part of that is just being a bigger kid. And then it was exacerbated by the food. So to the point where people would comment on it a lot. So there was the judgment that, you know, there's something wrong with your body or your eating habits because I did use food to cope. So I did, you know, I would eat a lot. I would park myself at the dip. I would park myself, you know, at the cookies, and I would eat a lot of food. And so again, there was comments about it. And I think that's why when I got to that vulnerable age of 12, where my body felt awkward, it was changing. And I had had a lot of comments that I wasn't the right size or shape. Then diet culture and dieting became the way that I sort of moved into. Now I'm going to deal with my emotions by being rigid and restrictive rather than feeding them.
And also, I assume getting praised and validated and accepted
Absolutely.
from people close to you from doing so.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm
Yeah.
curious as to if we could go back in past a little you, if little you was showing that it's okay to have food as a coping mechanism, let's look at why you need to cope in the first place.
Exactly.
Things would have been, maybe you wouldn't have been so attracted to dieting, maybe not, because it's, thrown in our faces everywhere we go.
Yes.
But just off the bat, I think that would be a nice place to go, wouldn't it? To children and people in general, to make it so clear that food is not the problem. It can be so helpful to use, even if it's not because you're hungry or need it like physically. But let's have a look underneath that without worrying about the food. Let's take a look at what's actually going on and support there.
Absolutely. And I think the using the food and then moving to the dieting, they're just two sides of the same coin. So they were both some effort to tend to myself in some way and find some kind of safety and comfort in one way or another. And neither one of them was getting at the root, which is why I felt the lack of that in the first place.
So let's get into the behaviors of the intuitive eating when you did it for the first time, then when it didn't work. So, what did that look like? Why didn't it work for you? What did it look like?
Because the only principle that I could remember most of the time was full permission to eat. And so every time I went to a meal, I was thinking, well, if I'm practicing intuitive eating, ignoring all the other principles, I've got full permission to eat. And if I try to stop myself from eating, then I'm, succumbing to diet culture all over again, and I'm being too restrictive. And so I mostly just kept honing in on that principle. And sort of some of the other ones, I just kind of floated in the back of my head, sort of the hunger fullness, even the whole chapter on dealing with your emotions. All of that was kind of in the back of my head, but not present. So I focused on eat what you want when you want it. And I've heard some other people discuss this now where I came from a rigid no, and then I got stuck in a permissive yes. And so I did that for years where, again, I just kept telling myself that was being intuitive, whereas I was not connected to my intuition. I really wasn't listening to my body, and I didn't feel good. I really didn't, but I kept trying to prove to myself that this was the right way, that this was freedom, because you're also hearing all these messages that kind of go together with intuitive eating that size doesn't matter. And that's all true in the sense that there's no one size that's good, but there is a size for me that's good, or there is a way of feeling in my body that's good for me. And I just wasn't paying any attention to any of those signals because now I had full permission to use food again to comfort
Yeah,
myself and
that's
my
what was really
emotions.
going on, wasn't
That's
it?
what was
So,
really going on.
what you've shared, in my opinion, it's still a reaction to diet mentality, free for all. And it depends on which way you look at it, because I do eat what I want when I want, and I'm connected to myself. I want to feel good in my physical body. So it all encompasses one another. So it just depends on how you see it. And I really love how you've just, clarified all you were doing is what you used to do. Full permission, and permission's always the answer, but you weren't even, again, it was just a plaster on top of what was really going on. And then off you went, but you felt shit in yourself anyway.
I did. And that's part of it too. So the discomfort was also just coming from the core of my being. It wasn't discomfort with my body. That was just, that to me was more the manifestation of what I was feeling deep, deep, deep inside. And I just had very little awareness initially, but it did put me on the path of learning that. So I still think it's essential. And it's definitely part of the healing process.
Definitely.
But if you find you're getting stuck there, I do think there comes a point in time where it doesn't become just about accepting yourself. It also becomes about looking into where all this gunk and stuff is coming from in the first place, rather than just saying, this is what it is, and meaning like how I feel and how I'm behaving and what I'm doing. You definitely have to look deeper.
And also, instead of just saying it's because of diet culture, it's because it may be because of those things, but at the absolute root, like you were saying before, why did you use food or use restriction in the entire first place? That's where we need to go. So how, so I'm assuming, I would love to hear the rest of your journey. So you noticing that you were not eating intuitively, you were just saying yes because you could, and then still numbing and distracting what was really going on. How and when did that start to change, and then what happened next?
So along the way, I kept doing a lot of self-awareness work. I was doing a lot of inner work. I was doing a lot of spiritual work, a lot of learning to, I was doing a lot of coaching work because I started to become a coach and I was transitioning out of the work that I was doing. The training to become a coach is very reflective. There's a lot of work that you're looking at your own stuff. And so that started to uncover different things in me that I started to understand better. I started to understand my emotional world better. I started to understand my beliefs better. And I started to understand my personality better, just sort of the different ways that I'd been conditioned to be. I started getting into some different personality awareness tools as well, like the Enneagram, where I just started to understand myself on a deeper level, which then enabled me to sort of look at some of my habits and realize that some of these things are patterns and habits that have come from a long, long time ago. And some of them were not serving me. And that's where it got a little dicey because here I was saying these things are not serving me, where I was also trying to be in a body acceptance place. And so it was a little challenging to navigate that because, again, I felt like I was going against sort of another paradigm. So I kind of jumped into this other paradigm. And then I felt like I was not being true to it because I didn't feel good and I did want to address that in some way. So I started to give myself permission to just explore anything with no labels. So whether somebody else would have called it diety or diet culture, or somebody else would have said it was non-diet or non-diet culture, I just said, I'm going to just absorb the material and let my body and let my soul decide, does this land with me? Does this feel good to me? What kind of things are going on in me that I need to address? And then just to me, it was part of owning myself, which at the end of the day is the work underneath all of it. So it's not trying to please anybody in the diet world, not trying to please anybody in the non-diet world, but just really focusing on the things that felt good to me and my body.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Finding your own path through looking within and then taking action from that place. I've always said dieting is not an action, it's a state of mind anyway. So whether that looks like someone choosing to eat a salad or a green shake or say no to cake, it doesn't automatically mean they're restricting. It could be a number of different things. For example, if someone came to me 10 minutes before this podcast interview, would you like a tub of Ben and Jerry's? Well, number one, I would say no because I haven't got time to sit and enjoy it and relax and eat it properly. Number two, I'd say no because I'm having dinner not that long after here. And number three, I want to be focused on the interview, not in the place of, enjoying that food emotionally. So there's multiple reasons why someone can say no to something and it not be restriction.
Exactly. And I talk about that a lot on the summit, sort of redefining restriction. And I say something similar to you. I always say the action is about the energy that you're bringing to it. And is it an energy of openness or is it an energy of shutdown, numbing, closure? Is it an energy of fear? Or is it an energy of love in the decision you're making to do whatever you're doing? And sometimes a yes to something is love, and sometimes a no to something is love. And it really depends how it feels in your body, and you get to make that choice.
I love that, Elizabeth. So can you, I know you touched on it in your share just then, but I think it's going to be really helpful if someone is really resonating with what you're saying, whether it's in the quote free-for-all eating or in the restriction or whatever it may be. And you said you got to know yourself better. And you shared a few things that you did to get to know yourself better. How could someone who doesn't know how or doesn't know what that means start to get to know themselves better so that then, therefore, they learn the tools of self-awareness and self-exploration, which is what's got you to where you are now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I mean, the things that pop into my head, I feel like are things everybody knows, but then I realize that not everybody does. Just pausing sometimes, pausing before you take an action, asking yourself, what am I doing this for? Like, where is this coming from? Doing a lot of reflecting. I'm a big journaler, so I would journal a lot, just in the morning, just sort of where am I? How do I feel? Completely unedited. So, not no apologies, even if I didn't like what I was saying or how. I allowed myself to say it. So even if I was in a place where, maybe I had a judgment on my body and I'm not supposed to say that, but I would say it and then have compassion for saying it. So sometimes you just have to get out the things that you're feeling rather than try to tell yourself you shouldn't be feeling that way. So I would say going through the coaching journey. I mean, I have my co own coaches all the time because once I saw the value in coaching, I kept going down that route road. In addition, I'm a big book reader and a podcast listener and a blog reader. And so I would just absorb information, or I would look for people who are having a similar experience and just kind of look at how did they get through it? What kind of reframes are they using? And I would say, again, on the coaching journey, my coach training was very spiritual in nature. So it was just understanding we're here for a lot more reasons than we think, that there's so much more to us than just our bodies, that everything is always okay, no matter what it looks like on the outside. And just kind of seeing the ways that I was manifesting different feelings in myself, and just getting, again, that more awareness of what's really going on here, because we tend to come up with an explanation that we think is what's happening, when really there's generally some deeper root inside that's trying to be met or fed or a need somewhere. So I would say pausing, reflecting, asking a lot of questions, and bringing that self-compassion. If you don't have self-compassion, I would start there, because without it, it's hard to reflect sometimes, because you're just going to beat yourself up. I was actually posting on Instagram the other day that, like, 2023 was one of the worst years of my entire life. And just to be able to look at myself with compassion when feeling like there are so many things that I could have done better. That's compassion in action. And that allows you to feel the feelings of feeling terrible, but also understand that you're going to be okay and everything's okay, and it's okay to feel that way. So, I think those things are very important. And to get to that self-compassion place, again, that was a study, it was a practice. I'm still practicing it all the time. And so just even tiny baby steps in the direction of that is incredibly useful. And some days you won't be able to do it very well, but you just keep chipping away at it. I would, because at the end of the day, I also know we're not ever done with this. So now I understand I'm on a journey. I have no idea what it's going to bring. Every day could bring something completely new. And my job right now is to really learn how to be with that, and find safety in my own body and my own system. And self-compassion helps you find that safety.
Yeah, there was so much gold there. And what I'm hearing is, just to reflect back to the listeners and the watchers, it's not a quick fix. It's not 6 weeks and then you're completely healed and you're done, because it's a journey. You absolutely can uncover a lot and heal a lot in weeks and months. But it's one day at a time, like you said, chipping away, self-discovery, curiosity, exploration. It's not just a in and you're done. And that's what the opposite to diet culture, isn't it?
Absolutely right, because diet culture, it's urgency, it's quick fix, it's telling you there is something wrong with you. I love the Ram Dass quote, which is, the world is perfect exactly as it is, including your desire to change it, because to me that just encompasses all of it. Like, everything's okay, there's nothing wrong, and if there are things that I want to shift, I can do that. I can put my attention on something. As long as I'm doing it with gentleness and with compassion, it doesn't mean you're not going to work hard on things. It doesn't mean you're not going to push yourself sometimes. But as long as it's just coming from that energy of curiosity and compassion.
Compassion is everything, because I used to think before, because now I'm naturally self-compassionate. I've wired it that way and learned how to be loving and compassionate, and that's my natural state now. But before I was, and as I started to explore self-compassion, I thought it was weak. I thought it was a permission slip to just fail, whereas that's so far from the truth. Because yes, being mean to yourself and very harsh and unkind to yourself, it might get you a little bit further over a short distance, like the rabbit in the hare, I guess. But self-compassion, you enjoy the ride, you get to learn about yourself along the way, and you keep going and you keep progressing and you enjoy the view and you enjoy the journey. And you, whereas for me, self-flagellation got me like five steps forward, 20 steps back.
Yeah.
And then I'd feel even worse. And it was so it was never true progression. So self-compassion is key, I think.
Yeah. And they've even done studies on that where you think that the harsher you are to yourself, the better you'll do. But actually, the more compassionate you are, the better you'll do, because you allow yourself to fail a million times when you're compassionate. And you're not going to succeed unless you fail a million times.
Yeah.
That's just part of the process. And when you can accept it as part of the process and not make it personal, it becomes a lot easier to have success. And the route feels better along the way. So even though it's a journey, it feels good as you go along it, even if you're messing up all the time, it still feels okay.
That was my experience too. And there's three quotes that stick out for me as you were sharing about your journey of personal and spiritual development. And I would just like to share them during this conversation. The first one is, everything will be okay if you're okay with everything.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
That
one,
led me back to acceptance and embodying acceptance and surrendering, looking for the positives, or just being okay with what is, because you have no other choice anyway.
Right.
And then from that place, you can make different choices and get a different outcome, right? So that's the first one. The second two are very similar. So I'll say them one after another and then just like go into it. The first one is, we attract what we believe about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one is, how we perceive ourselves is how we treat ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So those two combined led me to think, oh my God. So I really do create my own life experience.
Mm-hmm.
If I choose to work on believing that I am lovable in my authentic body and I'm good enough as I am without being perfect, then I will attract that new belief to me and live that reality. And then also how I choose, and I had to choose over and over and over again to begin with, a million times a day to start with. If I choose to perceive myself as worthy, as good enough, as lovable, then I will see myself that way. And then that's when I really kind of went from understanding what you create your own reality means to truly knowing and embodying, oh my God, we literally create our own reality. And this is how. So that was like a game changer for me in every regard.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's, I would put that in the spiritual bucket in terms of those are the life lessons that I learned that helped me feel just so much better in my body and better about my choices and better about the journey, even when you have those times that are just incredibly difficult. But I would also say all of that work that I did also helped me through those times. So if I had had a year like last year, 10 years ago, I don't think I would have gotten out of bed for the entire year. And after doing this kind of work with the self-compassion and the grounding and the nervous system work, the belief work, all of that, being able to see things from a higher perspective, being able to see that everything's always working out for me, being able to see that everything that happens, even when it feels terrible, is trying to help me see something, it's trying to help me grow. Like, knowing all that, I didn't spend one day in bed.
Yeah. Wow.
Even though that would have been okay as well. There's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely. Yeah. But I didn't feel compelled to. There was nothing to hide from. It was all okay, even though it was not fun.
Yeah. I almost want to say, like, I am so sorry you had that experience of last year, because I didn't know. You know, we've spoke a few times now. We're starting to get to know each other. And when you shared, like, that was the worst year of your life, my heart was just like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I am, but at the same time, I'm not, because you're being gifted so much through working, navigating through this.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the gift of this work, is even the gift of diving into our food and body stories. Like, that is always been trying to get me to see something.
Yeah.
And this doing this summit was incredible because I was still getting mirrored from all the different speakers, so many messages that I needed to hear again, especially coming on the end of a very difficult year. So I
Yeah.
think it's so interesting that I ended the year by putting that together because it was so much that I needed to hear as well.
Yeah, when I first started coaching, and I would say I'm not always now, some of the things I share definitely, but when I first started coaching, everything that I was sharing, I needed to hear it
Oh,
too.
yeah.
Because yes, I had got so far and I was ready to help people. I had imposter syndrome and all the things, as we all do when we start these things. But everything I was sharing with true passion and understanding was because I needed a reminder of that. And as we progress, I mean, our journeys sound similar in terms of we started off with food and body. That was the invitation, the big door that led us into understanding that, oh my God, that was literally just like a small thing to look at. And then now you're left with all this exciting and messy and magnificent ways of understanding self on a deeper level. And one of mine and my best friend quotes as we were navigating what you've described is, "Everything is rigged in my favor." So
And
even
the
stuff that you don't want to happen, it's rigged in
exactly.
my favor.
Everything's happening for my highest good is what I usually is the way I phrase it for myself.
Yeah.
And even like even with the horrible year, I knew that the whole time. And that was the first thought I had was, so this is how it's going down, but this is for my highest good. And somehow I wasn't listening to something I needed to listen to. And so this is giving me some messages. And I think that's why it's so important to work through the food and body stuff, because then you are, that's a layer you've released, so you can
Yes.
keep opening to more.
Yeah.
And for some people, they're working through money stuff. For some people, they're working through relationship stuff. For some people, they're going to work through all the stuff. But as you clear those layers, you are inviting just a deeper level of lived experience. And that's what I was also asking for. Like once I got on the spiritual path, that's what I wanted. I just wanted to live a deeper, richer, more connected, meaningful experience, which I hadn't been living by numbing, dieting, living that very scripted, rigid, I'm going to do my job. I'm going to, take care of my house, but I'm not reflecting. I'm not connected to my soul. I'm not connected to my life.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what dieting is a perfect example of, is just
Day
following the
in, day
rules.
out,
Yeah,
doing what
exactly.
everyone expects you to do, having a
Yeah.
baby, getting a
Yeah,
mortgage, and
exactly.
then die.
Yep.
No,
Yep.
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I woke up after my third child, a couple, like maybe a year into that. That's actually what started my food and spiritual awakening, was just that realization that, okay, I've checked every box that was expected of me. I've literally followed the path. I've done everything anybody has ever taught me is what I was supposed to do. And I'm feeling hollow. I'm feeling empty. I'm not feeling connected or fulfilled. And I had no idea what that was. I thought I was just being ungrateful.
Yeah.
So that was another thing, is like, I just need to be more grateful. And it's like, no, I also need to be more connected to something I care about. And so that's actually what started me in, redoing my work and finding work that I really loved and redoing my relationship and working on that as well and redoing food.
Yeah.
Because those were three of the big energies that were sort of that I was doing just blindly. I wasn't doing from a connected place.
Wow. It's so true, isn't it? That your relationship with food and your body can show you so much about your life that you have no idea how connected that is. So, with
100%.
what you've just shared and that feeling, that like hollowness within. I remember someone said this to me, and I can't remember who it was now, and they said, "Vic," because I used to be called Vic back in the day, "Vic, you're searching for something, but you don't even know what you're searching for." And it wasn't until I understood what self-reflection was that that comment came back to me, and they were right. I was searching for something in dieting, in restriction, in having the perfect body, then in food and chocolate, and then in sex, and then in I was trying to get something to fill this hollow feeling within, and nothing worked. Right. Because it's not anywhere outside of us.
Right.
It can only be filled by self. And I think awareness of that can start to fill. Well, it's not, there's not even a hole. It's like a feeling because you're disconnected from self.
Exactly.
That's 100%. All it is.
Yeah. And I've had a lot of experiences over the last several years where just even having someone take me through a process of feeling more connected. I actually just did this with a friend 2 weeks ago, where it was like a guided visualization where I was like plugging myself back in to like my life source, you know, my life force energy, because I was feeling depleted and I was feeling disconnected. And it's all within us. I mean, that's why meditation is so important. That's why just stillness and pausing is so important, because like you said, none of these solutions, this filling up, comes from outside. It's filling up from inside. And then when we do fill up from inside, we're able to have all of those things that, you know, we were trying to, we thought would fill us. It's the paradox is you can't get there from the outside in. You have to get there from the inside out.
Yeah. And then the things that we were seeking when we were looking to fill the void, we can enjoy them.
Exactly.
And a pleasurable part of life. And then, you know, this quote, I think Mark David said this, I'm not sure, potentially it was him, the difference between medicine and poison is the dose. So I believe that to be true in many cases. And I also believe if you're taking something that is a poisonous dose to you, that's also just showing you something, because I believe that the universe, your higher self, however you want to look at it, is always like whispering and nudging and guiding you. And if you're disconnected to yourself, you're not going to hear that or listen to that. So it's going to slap you around the face when it needs to. That's what happened to me.
Yes.
I just had literally a client sign up with me 3 weeks ago, and she completely decided to recover from her eating disorder. She was all in. So she committed to the eating disorder, and she still is committed, and she was addicted to exercise. And I say was, because within 1 week she'd got the worst fight. She's basically been in bed for 2 weeks. She can't even look at a screen. And although that sounds absolutely horrific, and it is, I had a call with her yesterday because she's just starting to come out the other side. She's let go of all of that exercise addiction stuff. She's still been committed to recovery and eating, but she's literally had to stay in bed because her body had been asking for her to rest for like 20 years.
Right.
And she hadn't listened.
Right. Yeah, 100%. And I would say, when I say that last year was the worst year of my life, if I had been listening to it over the decades, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But I wasn't listening. I wasn't looking at it. And at the same time, like, there's no shame in it. There's no blame in it. There's no fear in it. Sometimes that's going to happen because we can't know what we can't know until we know it.
Exactly.
And if I had looked at some of these things 10 years ago, I might've had a totally different outcome. I wasn't the person I was then that I am now. So it happened exactly when it was supposed to happen.
Yes.
Even though you want to sit here and say, damn it, like, I would have fixed this 20 years ago if I could have. But no, now is the time, because now it's giving me the biggest bang for my buck, in the sense that it's going to move the energy. Yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. And it's bringing me even more than I could have ever imagined. So, yeah, it's
cold shiver when you were sharing that.
It's sometimes hard to wrap yourself around that, but I fully believe that's kind of how it works. And that's all we can do, is sort of that surrender to it.
I believe that too. And a quote that got me through, I mean, I'm the quote queen. I'm like, this is my favorite quote, like 500 times, with different quotes that apparently are my favorite. And another one that comes to mind is, oh my God, it's literally gone from my mind. You can't do that to me. I can't think what it was now, but it's exactly, it's linked to that word surrender. Oh, here we go. It's come back. Thank you, subconscious mind. You are exactly where you are supposed to be.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes.
No 100%. Hindsight thinking. No, I coulda, shoulda, woulda.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't. So, and you didn't do that because you weren't supposed to, or you did do that because you were supposed to. So that goes, I guess, links into that Ram Dass comment about, quote, about the world being perfect, even the things you want to change about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. One of my mentors always said, you can't until you can. And it's just so simple. Mm-hmm. If I could have done something differently 10 years ago, I would have, but yeah. I didn't have the awareness, the capacity, whatever it was, because I also believe there's just so much happening under the surface and yeah. around us that we're just not aware of. And yeah. we've also been conditioned and shaped in so many different ways that we're going to react a certain way to everything. And that's why, again, I think the nervous system work is so vitally important, because yeah. the more we can understand sort of how we are being conditioned and what those neural pathways are, then with the awareness of how it's impacting us, then we have choice. So that's part of my continual journey now, is always tuning in to see what are those habits and patterns that are not serving me, and how would I like to address that? What different things would I like to do, or how would I like to be so that I'm not continuing to create the situations that I've been creating?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you asked about that, because that was what I wanted to spend the last 10 minutes talking about, nervous system regulation. And I love how you just said, who do I want to be? Because so many people focus on the doing, the behavior, and changing that. But unless we change at an identity level and understand that we get to choose who to be. So one of my clients asked a great question. We were talking about, you need to be in order for you to have, you can't have in order for you to be, it has to be the other way around. And so I said to her, who do you need to be in order to fully commit to this recovery from the anorexia journey? And she came up with things like commitment, courageous. And I said, great. And then she said, so how do I be courageous? And I said, well, great question. You tell me. And she was a bit stuck. And I was like, this is the part of you that people can't explain what it is, because it's your consciousness. It's your life force. It's not your willpower. That's different. It's your will. Part of you that gets to choose, that has an abundant, infinite amount of any state of being that's available, that's ever been thought of before. You get to choose to be courageous and be that from your will, from your consciousness, to get you where you say you want to get to. And again, it's from with, you draw the courage from within. You can't get it from the outside. So to be courageous, it sounds so simple, doesn't it? It's a choice. And self-compassion alongside the being courageous when you're scared. When you're being courageous and you step into fear, then you have proof already in that instant that you can be courageous, and you can do the thing and then have the thing that the doing will bring you.
And the courageous looks different for everyone. So for one person, courageous might be running a marathon. And for someone else, courageous might be saying no to everyone and sitting on the couch and reading a book for the day. So what courage looks like is so different. And I love, I don't know if you're familiar with internal family systems. But when you get into the energies of self, courage and compassion are two of those primary energies. And so, you know, when you're, and connection. So all of these juicy things that we're talking about, these are all the energies of self that are available to everyone. And we all have them, and nobody's broken, and it's intact. And it's just a matter of clearing all the sludge away and clearing all the conditioning and the programming and the patterns and the habits to just let those things emerge in everything.
Oh, I love that. I'm just seeing emerging connection, courage, compassion. I love that. And so the last couple of minutes then, nervous system regulation, and I'll share what it looks like for me. And then I'd love to hear, well, I'll share briefly because I'm interviewing you, not interviewing myself, but I'll share like one thing that really works for me and I've had to use recently. And I've had to use it recently, not anything to do with food and body, but to do with my business. I am so grateful and blessed that my business is just skyrocketed this year already, and then all of last year. And I was looking at my numbers reflecting back just over the last few weeks, And I looked and I was just like having to sit with my hand on my heart and just breathe and be like, wow, it's safe and it's okay to receive this much abundance, because look at everything that you've given to people and look at the lives you've changed. So if I had just, you know, quickly not taken the time to sit with myself and blown over that and been like, oh yeah, these were my numbers and wow, that's incredible, and just got on with it, there would have been a dysregulation, because part of me wouldn't have felt safe to receive that much, because I'd never have in my life before. So I just needed to sit and breathe and be compassionate and kind and show myself that it was safe and ground that and open my capacity to receive. And then I could continue, you know, with the work I do. So that was something that's helped me, and that helped my nervous system to feel safe in this new normal of abundance that feels safe now. So I'm curious, what helps you when, and kind of what's your go-to nervous system regulation?
Yeah. And I feel like I have many, many, many tools on this front. And so I sort of choose each day what's easy and available, but I try to, some things I try to do sort of proactively, like daily maintenance.
Yes.
So whether that is a little Qigong, whether that is some tapping, whether that is some energy medicine techniques for just releasing stress from the body, whether it's movement, like going for a walk outside in the woods. So I have a lot of things that I try to incorporate just on a daily basis. If I'm in a hyper stress state, I'll do something like throw on my favorite essential oil and a playlist and dance around my room, something like that. Or journaling, or I would say when I'm feeling really stressed, I usually go to tapping, because tap or havening, which I actually teach havening, but that's another tool. So havening is another sensory technique for reducing it reduces emotions and trauma from the body through touch. So it's similar to tapping, but just different touch points. And it's very calming and relaxing, because you're creating delta waves that calm the amygdala. So if you're feeling threat and you're feeling tense, just doing some havening. It includes movements like on the shoulders.
I love doing this to myself.
Right. People do it to themselves all the time. And the other ones, again, are the hands and the face. And these are all things that we do when we're kind of stressed. We just kind of naturally go and touch our face. But if you do it with that compassion and with that sense of everything's okay, it can really diffuse the energy around a stressful situation. So I call on these tools all day long, or even if I was making my breakfast this morning and the smoothie was blending and I was just shaking. There's a Qigong move called shaking, where you just like let everything out, like you shake your arms, you shake your body, you shake your legs. And I just do that waiting for the smoothie to go, you know, just get that energy moving and released. So lots of different tools, plus things like really good nourishment, lots of water, good sleep. And if sleep isn't great, what can I do to explore why? You know, exploring stress levels. What are the stresses that I can do something about? What are the stresses that I can't? And how can I change my perception of those things?
Exactly.
So many.
Wow. There's so much wisdom in this 1 hour. It's incredible. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you. And can I make one point?
Yes.
When you're describing how good your business is, like, that doesn't surprise me in the least, because in interviewing you as a speaker, you were one of the most generous people that I talked to, linking me up with all kinds of people, connecting me without any question, without expecting anything back. And you just gave of yourself and shared. And to me, that is what's required for the universe to really conspire and share back with you. So it makes perfect sense to me that you're having a great year.
Thank you. I really received that with so much love. So thank you, Elizabeth.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And I would love for you now to talk about the summit, And also, of course, how people can work with you, because it's clear you're so full of wisdom and knowledge and lived experience. So talk about all the things, and then also anything that perhaps I've not asked you that you might like to share.
Okay, thank you. So yeah, the summit is called the Body Confident Woman Virtual Summit, and it's a series of interviews that I've done with 26 speakers, all about food peace, body peace, but from different angles. So what I love is I've kind of curated from my own lived experience things that have helped me. So I talk to somebody about IFS. I talk to somebody about havening. I talk to people about sexuality and how those energies can sometimes be affected when we are not fully living from our life force energy. And often when we're restricting with dieting, we're restricting other things. So yeah. Just exploring those connections, exploring the nervous system connection. I talked to someone about that. So I basically sat back and thought, who would I have loved to talk to when I was on my healing journey? And let me reach out to all these incredible practitioners. And it was such a treat. I mean, I have divinity professors talking about the spiritual connection to food. I have cookbook authors talking about how to fall in love with food. It's just, to me, I got off every call just feeling so uplifted. And I've never done anything like this before. I also had to get through my imposter syndrome. And for me, it was growth. It was my growth too. So that is out there. That is available for people to enjoy coming up. It starts on January 17th. It runs through January 31st. And every day, a couple new videos will be released that people can watch for at least a week. So you don't have to rush and watch it that day. You have a week for each one. There's a link that you can probably share in the show notes where people can sign up for that. Yeah. And again, it's absolutely free. There is
My
a paid option.
Is, why is it free?
It's free because on some level, I just wanted to give this to people. I just wanted to share that there's possibility here. There's options. There's freedom. There's so many things when we can clear this, the dense energy of the food and body stuff. When we can clear that out, there's just so much more available to everybody. So if I can help, if I can support one person in clearing out even one thought that's going to lift them a little higher, like to me, it's totally worth it. So it's been as they say, a labor of love. I also haven't felt super connected to a project in a long time. And this just, I don't know. It's one of those things that it just had a life of its own and I just kept following the steps, but it just felt so good to share this with other people who may be in the position that I have been in my past.
Wow, you have such a beautiful, big, giving, generous, loving heart. Mm-hmm. And that shines through so clearly. And this is going to help so many people. I wish I had had access to this at the start of my recovery too, really, because yeah. I can't wait to watch and to listen and to continue learning through the speakers you've chosen. So yeah, I will definitely put the link below. So please sign up if you, well, it's not please sign up, it's if you want to gift yourself this gift, sign up.
I mean, these speakers are people I'll continue to listen to myself. It's almost like having, a meditation series where it just makes you feel good when you hear these people talk. And again, it's just a wide variety of perspectives, and even the practitioners are on different places on their healing journeys too. Mm-hmm. So they're bringing wisdom from all different parts of the spectrum. And that's also something I really wanted to include is the whole arc of the spectrum. So there's so much healing and growth that can happen, and it can look so many different ways for so many different people. So it's not always going to look like, your neighbor or your friend, and you get to decide, choose your own adventure, what it looks like for you.
That's amazing. Yeah. I love that, because without going too deep into it, I know my friend Gillian, Dr. Gillian mm-hmm. Murphy, she's going to be talking about such incredible things that I don't talk about because they're not aligned with where my clients are at, because it would be too much. But everyone needs to hear this. So
yeah,
very exciting that you brought all of this together.
And that's an excellent point. And I'm going to make it in the summit frequently in my own interviews that I do, in my own message to the group, just this idea that where you are might be different than where a speaker is. And that doesn't mean anything is bad or wrong. That doesn't mean they're bad or wrong. That doesn't mean you're bad or wrong. That just means you're in different places and having different experiences. And if something doesn't resonate, we set that aside and we go in the direction of the things that do, because that's where your focus is being drawn. I know that sometimes this world can get fairly divisive, and there can be people with a lot of opinions about what we should talk about and what we shouldn't. And it's we all have the same purpose at heart. We don't want anybody to suffer, and we don't want anybody to get hurt, and we don't want anybody to get stuck in paradigms that don't serve them. But that those are all different for everyone, and we can't decide for other people what's right for them.
Just being, staying open mind. What did I think one of my coaches said? This is probably wasn't even my coach, but I remember him sharing it with me. Your mind works best when it, like a parachute, when it's open. So open heart, open mind, take what resonates, leave what doesn't, and enjoy. And how can people work with you? Are you taking clients on currently?
I am taking clients on, and people can work with me. I mean, they can reach out on my website, which is elizabethhallcoaching.com. During the summit, I'll be offering even free consults if people want to just hop on the phone and talk about where they're at on their journey. That'll be part of my free gift to the people who are listening. And you can email me, Elizabeth at elizabethhallcoaching.com, if you want to reach out and set something up or have a question. So,
Amazing. Wow, I'm so excited for this. And Elizabeth, again, what an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for being here.
and thank you for having me on the show and asking me all these great questions.
You are
Thanks.
welcome. And to the listeners, to the viewers, we love you. Well, I'm sure Elizabeth loves you too. We love you. I love you so much. I will see you in the summit, and I will see you next week on a call as well. Much love.